Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Clinton Sports Podcast on this 5th of February 2018. I'm your host, Cyril Joe Quinn, taking you for the next 45 minutes as we discuss the world of sports and pop culture. As always, call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me on Instagram at Cyril Joe Quinn, or go to itunes.apple.com and look up Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. The show will probably post probably 20 to 30 minutes after the show's conclusion. You'll be able to receive it or see it on iTunes. Well, we finally come to the end of the 2017 NFL season, a season that none of us will soon forget, culminating with a Super Bowl championship for the Philadelphia Eagles. Congratulations to them, their first Super Bowl championship, first football championship of any kind since 1960. Remember, it's like the Eagles franchise. They were the first, the only franchise to hand the great Vince Lombardi, greatest coach of all time, his only playoff defeat. That was the only loss Lombardi suffered in that 1960 NFL championship, as he would go on to win to be 9-1 for his career. And listen, I've been watching the Super Bowl. My first Super Bowl game I watched was the 85 Bears. 88 Hampton Village, 84. I have to get this right. 88 Hampton Village. Okay. I remember it. Don't remember the game much because it was a blowout. But I remember, you know, my mom throwing the party. Patriots getting crushed by the Bears. I didn't even know what at that time. Really wasn't even following sports in 1985, 86. I've never seen a Super Bowl that neither defense had a chance in. Neither one of these defenses had a chance. I've never seen a game Super Bowl like this. It was as entertaining and wild of a game as you will ever see. 17 records set in the game. You had records for total yards, passing yards, total yards by a team. Second only to the San Diego Super Bowl in terms of total points. So this was a game where you just had everything. And really, this game kind of exposed what I already thought going in, and that was that the Philadelphia Eagles were the best team in the world. I thought that 2 weeks ago, after they took out Minnesota, I posted it. I said this, despite what happens, I think Philadelphia was the best team in football this year, and this did nothing but confirm that. Let me begin with Doug Peterson. Doug Peterson's coaching job this year and what he did in particular after Carson Wentz went down is one of the best coaching jobs that I've seen in the last 20 years. I mean, it really is. I mean, I think I'll go back to Belichick 2001. Nobody thought that Patriots team was going to win the Super Bowl. You can go back to even further before that, Parcells did in 1990, taking out San Francisco in the three-peat game, losing Phil Simms and winning a championship with Jeff Hostetler as his backup as his starting quarterback. So those are kind of coaching jobs to me that stand out in my lifetime. This was right up there. Because when Wentz went down, and I said it on this program, I posted stuff on social media that I thought the Eagles would finish. I mean, I thought the Eagles were done. That's one injury. 99 times out of 100 that you don't survive in the NFL when you lose your starting quarterback, especially a quarterback who was on his way to becoming the MVP of the league. And he would have been MVP of the league. I'm not so sure he wasn't. I mean, now, until it looks, my case for him being MVP doesn't look as strong, the fact that he won a championship without him, but he was on his way to becoming to being the MVP of the league. He was playing the best football of any quarterback in the league at the time before he went down. and that that road went over the Los Angeles Los Angeles Rams. So for Doug Peterson to coach this team, to have them believe that they can still compete at a high level, to coach up Nick Foles, and listen, Nick Foles was a guy who we saw had some success prior to this year with Andy Reid in Philly, but for the most part, Nick Foles was a journeyman backup quarterback. Nick Foles, again, in this postseason, played as well as any quarterback has played in the last 15, 20 years. I put his postseason up there with what Drew Brees did in 2009, with what Joe Flacco did in the Super Bowl winning season. I would put his postseason up there with any postseason that any quarterback has had in recent memory. He was that good in the postseason. He was that great, I should say, in the postseason. He outplayed Tom Brady. Period. He outplayed Tom Brady. So, you know, listen, this team really, you know, wore that chip on their shoulder. They wore it, and they talked the talk, and they walked the walk, and they, you know, really, against all, really beat the odds. I mean, again, you don't lose a quarterback of that magnitude and win a championship. I've seen teams fall apart losing players who were or were not their quarterback. Important players or important non-quarterbacks on teams, and the team just not be able to just function after an injury of that magnitude. Again, I'll say this. I hope Washington Nationals fans were watching. Keep knocking on the door. That's why you can't just shrug off, you know, going to the playoffs every year, winning a division, things of that nature. You keep knocking on the door, eventually you're gonna kick it down. And the Eagles, again, were able to kick down that door. They are the Super Bowl 52 champions, well-deserving. 50-1, that was the preseason odds before the season. They were 50-1 to win it all, and now they stand on top of the football world. And the scary part about it, especially if you are somebody who roots for a team in the NFC East, is that this could just be the beginning. As a young team, their quarterback is young. You know, Doug Peterson basically is just getting started. So this could be going on for a very long time. I know that's hard to say in the NFL. Things can change quickly, injuries. But health withstanding, that team is going to be a problem for a long, very long time. Just getting started here on this next edition of the Cyril Joe Clinton Sports Podcast. When we return, we will take the Patriots side of the coin and much, much more on this next edition of the Cyril Joe Clinton Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. .215-6180 is the call number. Super Bowl 52 champs, Philadelphia Eagles. And I'm going to tell you, I'll say this. I read a few things, whether it's through social media or in the newspapers on the internet. I don't want to hear from any Giant or Cowboy fans. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't want to hear from you. I mean, Giant fans still talking about 2011 and 2007. No one cares, okay? You have an aging quarterback. You know, the coaching general manager is still up in the air as far as how that looks forward to the next season. David Tyree is retired. Eli Manning is aging. Plaxico Burress doesn't play anymore. That time is done. Okay? I don't hear any Giant fans. And the idea that there were Giant fans rooting for the Patriots, I know you detest the Eagles, but that. I mean, there should be a limit to everything. Again, Cowboys, I don't want to hear about the early 90s. Emmitt, Troy, Mike Orvin, they're all old. Okay? Hall of Famers, they're all old. No one cares about that. Those championships in the 90s. I don't even talk about what Washington won in the 90s. It doesn't matter to me anymore. It's 2018. And the bottom line is, you have a monster in your division. A team that's better than you, a team that's better coached than anybody in the division right now, a team that's the best quarterback in the division right now. So, the past does not matter whatsoever. I don't care how many Super Bowls you've won or Super Bowls you've won in the past. No one cares. It's 2018. The NFL stands for now. It's a now league. I don't care about the past. I only care about what the Patriots did 2 years ago. Now, that will seem old, that 2016 championship against Atlanta. We live in a now world. No one cares about getting this dust on those trophies. Troy, Michael, Emmitt are old. No one. So, I don't want to hear from any Cowboy or Giant fans for that matter. You see, the Washington fan, like I am, there's really not a big rivalry between Washington and Philadelphia. They don't like each other, but it's not a big rivalry. The Giant Eagles detest each other. The Cowboys and the Giants hate each other. The Giants and Eagles detest each other. I mean, with a passion. I mean, that's like almost borderline Yankees Red Sox. So I understand from that standpoint. But again, this is a thing for Philadelphia. Nobody cares about what the Giants and the Cowboys did in the past. It doesn't matter. I mean, that's all there is to it. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Now, the Patriot side of this. Listen, I was dead wrong about this game from the standpoint of not so much my prediction, but in terms of how the game would go. I thought the Eagles would win a close game. I predicted, I think, 24-21. Thought their defensive line would dominate. They would make enough throws, would make enough plays, not be great. I did not see this game coming. Foles was great. The Eagle defense, both defenses were terrible, minus a strip sack by Brandon Graham. One of the reasons why I liked Philadelphia coming into this game, and I was very confident about Philadelphia winning this game. I really was. Patriots had a lot of stuff going on that are unpatriot-like going up and going to this game throughout the course of the season, that kind of trickled down. It's just, you know, trickled down from the top of the from Robert Kraft on down to Malcolm Butler. The Brady Belichick Kraft stuff is real. The idea that Brady and Kraft are in cahoots, and Belichick Garoppolo, that's what we talked about. That situation, was real. Now you got this TB12 with Brady, who all of a sudden has decided at age 40 to become a brand. I'm sure Belichick wasn't thrilled about that. And now, to me, everything came to a head on game day when you have Bill Belichick, in essence, bench a guy in Malcolm Butler, who just 2016 was all pro, second team. Was a Pro Bowler in 2015, and was a guy who had played in 97.8% of the defensive snaps over the course of the season. The backup to Butler did not find out that he was didn't find out that he was playing, starting, until right before kickoff. One of the most peculiar Super Bowl game day decisions I've ever seen in my life. Now, something's going to come out. I don't know. Before this offseason is over, I would say before free agency, sometime in March, late February, March, or maybe even sooner, something is going to come out that makes sense of all this. Because right now it makes zero sense. It's telling me that Bill Belichick is going to lessen his team's chances to win, to make a point. So there has to be something that we don't know behind the scenes that had to occur. I'm trying to give Belichick the benefit of the doubt. Otherwise, it's one of the dumbest nonsensical decisions ever made in the history of the Super Bowl. I mean, they were expatriates killing Belichick and the Patriots on that decision. Whether it was Brandon Brown or Jamie Collins. Matter of fact, not even expatriates. Dante Hightower, who was injured earlier this season, liked a comment made by Brandon Brown, who of course played for the Patriots a couple of years back when they won the Super Bowl against Seattle. So, you know, it will all come out. It will all leak. But whatever happened, it stayed in close quarters up until game day. And, you know, you see Malcolm Butler crying on the sideline. And, again, that's the kind of stuff that never occurred with the Patriots in the past. Tom Brady, Brandon himself, you know, just Brady, Belichick, Kraft, you know, nonsense that went on over the course of the Vine season, over the course of the season. That type of stuff never happened in the past with the Patriots. So, again, they have some issues from within. I got a sense in watching the Patriots last night, despite how close they came still to winning the game, that this was it. As far as their dominant run atop the NFL. And I wasn't thinking that, I'm not thinking that Brady or Belichick were going to retire, but this, there was a sense of finality with the Patriots last night. That they won't see another championship or make another Super Bowl appearance in the Belichick-Brady era. Now again, that era could be over after next year, in 2 years, but I got a sense that this is kind of it. That's what I felt last night. At around midnight or 12:30 or so, once I was, you know, watching all the post-game stuff, and it really felt that way with the Patriots. And again, it's been 2001, 2018. You know, one of the great runs in the history of the sport. Maybe I can make a case for the greatest run in the history of the sport. But you know, a lot of nonsense going into this Super Bowl that the Patriots dealt with, that in the past you wouldn't even hear about this type of stuff. Other than the major story, again, with the exception of the Deflategate, that was the one thing that the Patriots, that's the only time the Patriots heard that you had any controversy for them going into a Super Bowl. 347-215-6180 is the call number. When we return, we'll talk about tonight's headlines and get into a little NBA. That's coming up, and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Jokin Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Is the call number in this edition of the Cyril Jokin Sports Podcast. Super Bowl ratings were the lowest since the 2009 Super Bowl between Pittsburgh and Arizona. That's despite the fact that the Patriots have been involved in three of the top five most watched Super Bowls of all time. I think a lot of that had to do with, first of all, there's so many different ways and platforms that you can watch a game. I don't know if the ratings can account for all the different various platforms. That's number one. Number two is, I was going to mention this before the show ended, but I'll mention it now. People were annoyed by football this year, whether it was protesting Colin Kaepernick or whether it was protesting the sport itself or protesting players kneeling, that still weighed heavily to me on the ratings. I don't think as many people were just had an interest in the game. People were sick of the Patriots. That is part of it. And Philadelphia has a lot of fans in the Northeast. I don't think Philadelphia is a national team. Like, I don't think Philadelphia. Now, they might be, after this, they might become a national team. So you're going to have your natural course of bandwagon fans that all of a sudden become Eagle fans. So that they could possibly become a national team. But they're not a national team, as in the case of the Cowboys or the Raiders and the Steelers, or even what the Patriots have become. So I think that contributed to the ratings not being as high as recent years. But again, still will be the most watched program this year by far. And you still have, again, networks, whether it be Fox, paying money hand over foot to write to your Thursday night rights, which we know how bad the Thursday night games are, can be, and all the injuries. But then, the NFL is still a cash cow. But again, the impact of what was going on off the field, people being annoyed in the NFL, was definitely felt with those ratings. Matt Patricia had been named officially the head coach of the Detroit Lions. Over the course of Patricia's tenure with New England, they had the second lowest points allowed per game in the league. Only Seattle allowed less points per game over the course of the last 5 years, over the course of the last 6 years that Patricia was defensive coordinator with New England. Again, you never know what kind of coach these coordinators are going to become. You just never know. Doug Peterson, to give you a sense on that, Doug Peterson, there were 7 coaching hires in 2016, in the offseason in 2016. Doug Peterson was ranked 7th. So, you don't know what what's going to trend, how a coach is going to make that transition from coordinator to head coach. It's a major jump. Unless you've been a head coach before, you never know how it's going to turn out. Again, Patriot, Bill Belichick disciples have not fared well, whether it's Romeo Cornell, whether it's Josh McDaniels the first time, those guys have not fared well as head coaches. We'll be interested to see how Patricia does his first time around and how McDaniels does his second time around, as he's expected to be named the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. I don't buy for a second that Josh McDaniels will not take that job there. There's some whispers that he's not thinking about that he hasn't fully committed to that job. Andrew Luck is his quarterback. That's a franchise that, he's going to be given time to turn, he'll be given some time to turn it around. But he has Andrew Luck as a quarterback. I'll be shocked if McDaniels ended up taking that job. So we'll see what happens with that. But a lot of question marks heading to 2018 for the New England Patriots. They could lose not only the opposite defensive coordinator, but just the opposite line coach. Scarnecchia could be gone. He's one of the great offensive line, one of the great assistant head coaches of all time. I mean, that guy, the offensive line, look at the offensive line before and after him, it's like night and day with what he's done since he returned to the Patriots. They can lose him. He can retire. I mean, the guy, 70 years old. So it could be a lot different looking Patriots staff. It's going to be a lot different looking Patriots staff come 2018. Also, a big week in college basketball. College basketball now will take front and center, more at least until the NBA All-Star break, probably at least until the NBA All-Star break comes around. But I think college basketball will take, now it's a chance to take front and center in regards to coverage. March is not, before you know it, it'll be March. Rivalry weekend, college basketball. You'll have Duke and North Carolina on Thursday, Oklahoma, West Virginia tonight. Later in the weekend, again, I'm looking forward to Michigan State and Purdue. Two top five teams will be battling out on Saturday. So a big weekend, big week for college basketball, rivalry week. I've always felt that the college basketball season does not officially begin until Duke and North Carolina around face-off. Neither one of those teams are playing well right now. Duke had an awful loss, and I did the game Saturday at series with losing to a St. John's team that lost 11 straight and hadn't won since December 20th. St. John's team that will not even be in the NIT, let alone the NCAA tournament. So Duke, this is not, you know, Duke may have vintage talent, but this is not by any stretch of imagination a vintage Duke team. They do not. They don't guard anyone whatsoever. They really don't have a true point guard. So they'll be very, very, very interesting to watch them over the course of the rest of the regular season. North Carolina hasn't played well. Played. Losing three out of their last four. They just snapped a three-game losing streak Saturday against Pittsburgh. So both teams desperately need to win moving forward in the ACC, where Virginia continues to stay undefeated again. I don't trust Virginia in the tournament because Virginia just does not, to me, just not score enough points. You're not going to defensively hold everybody to 50 points. So I had to see Virginia in the NCAA tournament come up big. I would make it to the second week before I can completely trust them as a legit championship contender. I know they're very good defensively. They're great defensively. But offensively, I don't trust them. And they've had some bad showings in the NCAA tournament, even with teams that were perceived to be national title contenders. 347-215-6180 is the call number. When we return, we'll get to some NBA as well as top final five teams in the NFL. That's coming up in much, much more in this edition of the Cyril Joplin Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Back to this latest edition of the Cyril Joplin Sports Podcast. Of course, you NBA All-Star Game is coming up in a couple of weeks. Trade deadline is a couple of days away. I don't anticipate any big moves. Cleveland, I know, is trying to do something. They just don't have, for the most part, outside of that Brooklyn pick, they really don't have any tradable assets that they can recruit big time players for. I think if anything, they'll make a small deal. You've heard about George Hill, you've heard about some other players, but no game changer players. All the big time players, whether it be Paul George, DeMarcus Cousins, of course, is hurt. I didn't think he was moving there anyway. I didn't think the Warriors was going to trade him anyway, because I think they're trying to make the playoffs this year. But I think Cleveland might be end up being stuck with their team. Clippers are not going to move DeAndre Jordan to Cleveland unless the Cleveland is willing to give up that number one pick. So I don't see that move happening. You've been hearing rumblings about them trying to move both J.R. Smith and J.R. Smith and not Shumpert. But I don't know why I've also that name to the names get like I'll look it up in a minute. But I know J.R. Smith is one of the players that Cleveland's trying to move. I'll look it up right now. That name should not be me. Tristan Thompson. So again, two bad contracts to say the least. So it's a combination. The worst combination of everything. Two bad contracts and two players who have not been productive this year. So other teams, other teams are not stupid. Good luck trying to move those two players, unless you're moving them with the number one pick, the Brooklyn pick. I see both of them remaining with Cleveland throughout the course of the trade deadline. And listen, Cleveland, as currently constructed, will not make it to the NBA Finals. That's where I'm at with Cleveland right now. They will not make it to the NBA Finals. It's currently constructed. There's no on-off switch this year. There's not. It's just not there this year. You watch that team, and that, you know, listen, we know Houston's very good, very good, but, you know, that team right now looks like a team going in 10 different directions. And I don't know if this is true, but one of the NBA countdown personalities, I don't know who said this, brought up something that, you know, it's something worth mentioning, is, you know, players quitting on LeBron as a possibility of some of the struggles. And I'm not inside their locker room, but I'm telling you right now, that team is going in 8 different directions. And, LeBron's going to try to keep a stiff upper lip and not really let you inside of what's going on in that locker room. But we know that Ty Lue only carries so much respect in that locker room that everybody looks, LeBron is looked upon as being, you know, player coach, GM, part owner. And when LeBron is basically checked out, and you can be checked out, you can still average 26, 6, and 6, and still be checked out, but LeBron, at times, during the last 2 weeks, has looked like he's just not into it. And it's not just so much him not resting for the playoffs, he's just looking completely, just looking checked out. So what's going to happen now with Cleveland is you're going to start hearing those Laker rumors heat up about LeBron going to LA. I'm not saying it's going to happen. It's about certainly a possibility. But those rumors are going to take on a whole other level, especially around the All-Star break, with the All-Star game being in Los Angeles. So, again, that was really bad. I mean, say embarrassing against Houston, that doesn't do that game justice. Houston basically toyed with them. Toyed with Cleveland. Cleveland, again, as currently constructed, they will not come out of the East. Lakers are playing better. They had a nice win against Oklahoma City. I watched the game yesterday afternoon. And, you know, finally, you see Luke Walton starting to get through to his team a little bit. Especially the most important part of this whole streak they've had. And again, they haven't beaten great teams, but they had some decent wins. It's the fact that Lonzo Ball is not there. And at the beginning, remember, when Lonzo Ball was missing games earlier this season, they couldn't function without him. They looked like a G League team without Lonzo Ball. But now, you have Randall has played well. You have Randall. Kuzma has been playing well. Rolash has had a bad month. Did have a good January, but other guys like Randall, Jason Hart, those other guys have stepped up. It's not about making the playoffs. You know, Lakers, it is about trying to show LeBron that you can come in with another free agent with a Paul George that we can contend for a championship next year. That's what you're trying. You are auditioning for this year. Is a year-long audition for LeBron James. Paul George, I think, is as good as in L.A. He just has to have a jersey on. Just doesn't have to look a jersey on. I think Paul George is basically, I'm confident that Paul George is a done deal to the Lakers. So, but it's about trying. It's about auditioning for LeBron James. Steve Kerr, you know, I like Steve Kerr. I think he's a very good coach. I don't think he's great. I think he's very good, and he has just exceptional out-of-this-world talent. But whatever. But nobody wants to hear about Steve Kerr complaining about talking about his team being mentally tired. Or fatigue. No one cares. You have 4 All-Stars. Figure it out. You know what's mentally fatiguing? Losing. Try coaching the Sacramento Kings. Try coaching the Brooklyn. Okay. Try coaching the Knicks in the last decade. That's mentally fatiguing. That'll tire you out. Are mentally exhausted. No one wants to hear a bunch of complaining about Golden State being mentally tired. Who cares? I know it's against Steve Kerr. Listen, I know Steve is trying to create this, you know, this making the finals every year is so hard and trying to keep things fresh for your team. But I don't think Steve Kerr's been facilitated by any fans or media members or me or you or anybody else. But listen, nobody wants to hear about it. I mean, Golden State, Sporting One as well. We know Golden State hasn't played hard this year and still, you know, has the best record in the league. And we know anybody with a half a brain knows that Golden State is so by far the best team that it's not even funny. So, you know, again, it's February 5th. You have a coach who is looking to try to keep the season fresh for his team or is looking to try to, you know, let's get you all celebrate, get some rest, and we'll be recharged. You know, basically, I think Steve also is trying to send the best to his team. Like, listen, I understand that we're not going to go pedal to the metal trying to win a second straight championship, a third in 4 years. But once we hit this all-star break, we get these 5 days off, I'm going to expect a different level of performance after the all-star break. I think he's trying to send his team that maybe that cold message to his team once the all-star break, and trying to send it before the all-star break. Like, let's tighten things up a bit after the all-star break. I'll give you, you know, you can lose to Denver now. They lost, you know, by 30 points to Utah, which should never happen. We'll take some of these losses now, but come, you know, come February 23rd, 24th, whenever they return from the All-Star break, I expect things to look a little bit different. 347-215-6180, which is called number in the first edition of Show Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. When we return, I'll get into my final top five NFL teams. I think we know who's at the top. 2-5, maybe a little surprise, but we'll get into that and much, much more in this first edition of the Slow Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. The Justin Timberlake performance had to be one of the worst in the last decade. I mean, really, that performance is like I was in and out of it the whole time. I couldn't, like, you know, I couldn't get into it. I think I just couldn't get into it. The commercial, I don't know which was worse, the commercials or Justin Timberlake's performance. Probably Timberlake's performance. You did have a couple of movie trailers I was interested in, Jurassic World and Mission Impossible, but Justin Timberlake, can you have just a rotation? Right, the NFL has a Super Bowl rotation. They're going to rotate basically New Orleans, Minnesota, Arizona, and whatever new dome stadium, Indianapolis. There's a road to Houston. There's probably like a 4 or 5 stadium rotation that the NFL has for the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl halftime show is a rotation of performers. Pick 3 or 4 performers and just say, hey, we're just going to rotate you. Because, last night, the performance was about 14 minutes. It was 13 minutes and 59 seconds too long, as far as I'm concerned. And I'm a Justin Timberlake fan as far as, you know, some of his earlier stuff. I haven't been up on his latest albums. I know he released the album this weekend, but the last couple of Timberlake albums I haven't listened to. Some of his earlier stuff is very good, but That performance last night was a joke. I mean, that performance is bad. I don't blame anybody for going, you know, if you had to do a beer run, that was a perfect time to do a beer run over the course of that performance. So, again, just come up with a rotation of three or four top, call Bruno Mars, call Cardi B, who else is a top performer, call Beyonce, whoever, just come up with a rotation. Stick with that rotation, and they'll solve all your problems for the Super Bowl halftime performances. I mean, really. Call Kendrick, so you can get Kendrick, Bruno Mars, and somebody else, and another person, another two people. Kendrick and Bruno Mars should be a part of the rotation for Super Bowl halftime shows. Kendrick, Bruno Mars, Beyonce, that's three right there. So I've already thought in 5 minutes, I've already thought a way of fixing the Super Bowl halftime show. These geniuses get a whole year and still find a way to screw up the show. Top five teams of the final edition of top five NFL teams coming in, of course, number one, the champs, the favorites for next year, as far as I'm concerned. I don't care what Vegas says. The Philadelphia Eagles, they proved me right as far as being the best team in football over the course of the season. Win a championship without the starting quarterback, they'll be that much better with him next year. Number two, New England. New England, I do think this is the beginning of the end of the New England's domination atop the NFL, but they were the second best team. They were the second best team over the course of the season. Number three, Jacksonville. I was very impressed with Jacksonville's playoff run. They go out there, they manhandle Pittsburgh, and then they go to New England and should have won the game. Outplayed New England for the most part, should have won the game. Still figuring out how Jacksonville did not win that game, but they have a lot of young talent. Sounds like they're going to keep Bortles for next year, or they might, depending on what happens with Kirk Cousins, they could go after Kirk Cousins. Either way, Jacksonville will be hurt from 2018. Number four, Atlanta. Think about how close Philadelphia came to losing in the first round, basically in the divisional playoffs against Atlanta. Atlanta has the ball on the Philadelphia 2-yard line. So, just goes to show you that, sometimes that, these games are decided by, inches and yards. Again, that game was right there for Atlanta. They're going to look back and be kicking themselves for losing that game to Philadelphia in the divisional playoffs, but they were the fourth best team in all of football. Number five, despite the embarrassment in the NFC Championship, Minnesota had a tremendous year this season. They're going to have some decisions to make about quarterback between Bridgewater, Bradford, and Keenum. I think they'll bring Keenum back. I think they will probably get rid of Bridgewater because the coach is high on Bradford. He really believes Bradford. Bradford could be starting. Don't be surprised if Bradford's starting next year. I mean, don't be shocked at all if Bradford is starting. But Bridgewater can be the odd man out. So Minnesota comes in at five. Pittsburgh is a team that should be absolutely kicking themselves watching the Super Bowl last night because Pittsburgh, frankly, has had more talent than New England. They really should have represented. Pittsburgh should have represented the AFC in the Super Bowl on talent. Now, again, I don't know what's happened to Mike Tomlin over the course of the last couple of years. He was a top coach, but they were not coached well this year by Mike Tomlin. And it pains me to say that because I am a Tomlin fan, but they just weren't coached very well. And I just got to call it the way I see it. You should be watching that performance by New England last night defensively and watching that New England team, which to me was their worst team since 2001, going to the Super Bowl. That should buy you considering the level of talent that Pittsburgh still has had over the course of this year. So we'll see, but they will be certainly, Vegas has them third behind New England and Green Bay. They were fourth behind New England, Green Bay, and Philadelphia as the fourth favorite to win the Super Bowl in 2019. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Sir Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. As I say so long to my Facebook audience, I will see you next time on the next edition of Slim Drunken Sports Podcast. Take it easy.
To this latest edition.